I want to share with you what I think is, for me personally, the most important stone of Rosh Hashanah. The most important. I want to share you. I discussed it once. There was a family. If I said it once, maybe a year or two, then just remind me and stop me, okay? There was a family that was in it was a German family, and they there was one particular. As the situation in the 1930s began to worsen, so some of them went off to Denmark, and they settled in Denmark, which was at that point still was neutral. Well, it remained neutral throughout the war, but pretty much. But they went off to Denmark. Another part of the family remained in Germany until the situation became even worse. They tried to exit and tried to go towards Germany. And it was one part of the family in particular, which was a young couple. And they wanted to join them at that point in Denmark. They were very keen to join the family in Denmark. And it was getting more difficult, because at that point already, that was in the end of 30s, they'd realized that it's no future in Germany. They were of those that realized that there's no future. And they wanted to join the rest of the family in Denmark. But it was getting very difficult, and it was very difficult to get visas to remain, because Denmark was quite welcoming and there was quite a Jewish influx, but even that had a limit, and the visas had basically they'd run out of it. The only thing that was possible was to get a temporary visa of 3 months. That was the only thing. So they said, okay, better that than nothing. And that particular couple then went off to Denmark on a temporary basis, just for 3 months, hoping that maybe something will change and they'll be able to extend it somehow. And they were there, but after 3 months, they tried everything, and it was impossible to extend the visa. And it basically meant to return back to the burning fire of Germany, and that was 1939 by then, and to go back to it's ironic, but that's they couldn't. There was no way it would be allowed in Denmark. There was one thing: they had one protection, one connection, and the letters came in that they have to return, they have to go back to Germany, and they knew this is it would be the end of everything if they go back. There was one particular family member who had some connection to the ministry, and somehow they made connections. The impossible, what seemed impossible, was actually there was only one person that would be able to allow the exit to be extended, and to make the temporary visa into a permanent visa, and that's the king himself. It was a king who was actually quite an oivy soul, and he would be the only one that could overrule the process, and he could actually say, yes, it's fine, you can have a visa, you can stay here permanently with the rest of your family. So they somehow managed, that's to make the impossible possible, and they managed to get a visa, and actually, what's called it when you have a royal visit? An audience, that's right, an audience by the king, by his royal highness, I don't know what his name is, of the Danish king, and they were allowed an audience by the king. And she came in there, she was a lady then, she was, her husband wasn't allowed in the audience, only her, because she was the one that had the family connection. And she came, she was quite pregnant then. And she had this 5 minute audience by the Royal Highness the King. Very little they said, don't bother, it's not likely, he's a kind man, but not so. He's gonna say no, because ultimately there's rules and there's protocols, and he's like, she was allowed a 5 minute audience by his Royal Highness the King. And then suddenly she prepares in weeks in advance, and she knows about this, and she knows that her future is depending on that. If the default position is just she's going to be sent back to Germany with her family, and that's going to be the end of it. On the other hand, she has these 5 minutes that she can make it happen. If the king will allow, then she's free and she's allowed to settle in Denmark, and she'll be able to remain there. And then she knows the tension is rising as the days come closer and closer. And eventually, yes, that's the day she goes in. She tries to. She was very poor, but she got a Shabbos clothes, and she tried with that. She goes in there, and she's highly pregnant. And she goes into the waiting room, and she's ushered in. She's led in, until she finally gets into the royal area where the king is she's allowed in, and she stands in front of the king, and she knows now is the chance. She can either make it happen, or she's got now 30 seconds, 1 minute, 1.5 minutes to speak. She can either do it, she can make it or not. And she's getting, so she sees the king, and she knows that's the opportunity. She's got literally a minute to speak, very literally a minute to speak, and she freezes. And then she feels that she's getting more and more faint, and before she even has a chance to even speak and even utter a word, she overcomes by it. And yes, and she feels dizzy, and she feels faint, and yes, she faints. She faints on the spot. She faints. She that's it. She goes, and of course they take her out of the room and they get on the side and she's put to rest there for a bit of time, and eventually she wakes up and they give her something to drink and everything, and she says, "I can't believe it. I've missed my opportunity now. Had one slot, by the way. I'm not going to get another slot. That's for sure. And I'm gonna miss it. That's the last. That was my chance, and I've messed it up." And she's feels absolutely terrible and extremely upset. She's missed her chance. She's missed the slot. But then one of the ministers who was present tells her, "You look very upset. What's the problem?" He says, "Well, I had an opportunity. I had an opportunity to ask for a visa, to extend my visa into a permanent visa. And I just messed it up now. I was by the king and I messed it up." And he said, no, don't worry. And the king realized that's what you're here for, because it was obvious you're here for a visa. And he actually authorized into a permanent visa." And then she says, But why? I didn't have a chance to speak." And then she said, and then the minister says, "Yeah, because the king realized that you're going to be, you had an opportunity, you're so overcome of fear of this authority of the king, and it's such respect for the authority, and that he realized you're going to be a good citizen in the country. And since you've got that sense of respect and that sense of authority towards the king, he's authorized you, and he's personally given you a permanent visa." And she's obviously very relieved, and she goes home, and she's safe because of that. And that was, she never obviously went back to the king, but that was her slot by the king, and that was her chance. And because she fainted, she was given that extension of the visa. And this story is very close to my heart, because this lady was expecting, and she gave birth a few months later. That baby that was born is actually my father-in-law. And it's a very, the reason why it's such a powerful story, I think, because actually when we think about it, this is mamash what Malchut Bat Rosh Hashanah is all about. The Mefarshim ask, how does it make sense that we've got Rosh Hashanah before Yom Kippur? Surely it would make much more sense that first we ask, all the Mefarshim ask, right? This is the Pesach Salantos fame, that we first have to ask for Slicha Mechila Kapara, which is a tshuva process, and after you've gone through the tshuva process, then we're perhaps entitled to ask for a good year. Not vice versa. It really doesn't make sense. The first Rosh Hashanah, we are approaching the new year, and 10 days into that, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we do tshuva, and we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we ask Slicha Mechila Kapara. It seems to be the opposite, the other way around. We should really first do tshuva before we ask for new year. Yeah, that's the famous question. And the answer, what the Mefarshim say, is because, what's the general answer that is given? Yes, so Yimamlich Hashem. So the Bnei Musa explained that first, if Yimamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he knows HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then knows you're one of his people. And once you're one of his people, it's going to be real tshuva. First, you have to make sure you have got that connection. When his team, once you're part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's team, then we can ask for tshuva. But before that, who are you? I mean, who are you asking tshuva for? What are you doing here? Who are you? What are you doing here? So once we go through the Rosh Hashanah, then we're Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then after this, we can ask 10 days later, we can ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's very much the point of the story as well. That he realized that, this king realized that, yes, this is the person that is going to be a loyal citizen. That's mamash the point. She's going to be loyal. She has that fear of authority. She's got that. She had that sense of Mamlech, a boss of Adam, but she was Mamlech the king, and then after she realized, okay, you're going to be a loyal citizen. Because she accepted this particular king, the Danish king, as an authority, so that enabled him to see in her a loyal citizen and a potential loyal citizen. It was that sense of authority that makes somebody gives a potential of, and that is, you know, to some extent, I think that the pshat in Rosh Hashanah coming before Yom Kippur. So that's something I think I realize more and more that when we speak to children, and when we try to mechanach the children about Rosh Hashanah, and even, you know what, forget about children, even ourselves, we are so removed from what royalty is about. I mean, all we know is about the royalty nowadays is just it's not the real. I mean, I'm saying, do I have to switch this off now or not? I don't know. It's like it's not the real thing. It's all about the noise and That's not real. Royalty is an extreme authority. A real king, Melech Peretz Geda, he can literally do anything. Things against the Gemara's, he can do things which is against the law, and it's still legal because he's got the absolute authority. Melech Peretz Geda, he can take away possessions of people, and that's what authority is about. And we are very removed from that. It's centuries ago that we really have the concept of Malchus. So. And it's not just about the wealth, and it's not just about the noise, and it's not just about the, it's not that, it's much more about the authority, and that's what Malchus is really all about. Okay, that was just, that's the story. You like the story? I think it's a powerful story, no? This is my personal story of Rosh Hashanah, it's like that, yeah. Very interesting. Really. Very interesting. It's because of the fear, the trembling, that we can't utter that fear. Interesting. Yeah. So that's, I heard this, my shver told me that, my father-in-law told me that, that's the Danish. Yeah.
They're defined by the fact that they can look at who are they, somebody, and just instantly decide if that person is going to live or die. Which, according to today, I don't know if your brother doesn't have that. So maybe, is that kind of what you're
referring
to, is the authority?
It's the authority, yes. The sense of the authority.
He came to Mchatnowski a few years ago and said, we have a king in Africa. So in order to be about the third, he said, I'll make a brother. He's got authority to kill somebody. If he has authority. And he was a scammer, but he said yes, he bought him and he made a brother.
Yeah, I don't know what I remember there's some discussion about it. Does she really have the right, but she doesn't execute it, or does she not have the right? I remember once speaking to a legal person. There's a discussion in the legal world as to whether she doesn't have the power at all anymore, or does she actually really, she does, in theory, she does have the power, but she just would be silly of her to execute it because she's going to lose everything if she does it. But ultimately, she does have the right. So I don't know about that. But that's, I'm saying, in terms of what we have to understand towards Rosh Hashanah, it's certainly that you saw it. Okay, we're up to Siman Shin Chav, Seif Yud Aleph, and we're up to which is on page 290 in our editions. צריך לזרום בחורף. In the winter, one has to be very careful. שליטו ליודו במים שיש בהם שלג ובורות. You have to make sure not to wash your hands in the winter with water which has got shelek, snow, or borot hail. Because what you're doing, if you're doing that, because by rubbing it, because by washing your hands and rubbing it strongly, what you're going to do is inevitably you're actually going to cause some water to emerge from that. And we learned yesterday that this is a bit like Noilat. This is a bit like Loshna Mishnah Berurah was.
Stira.
What is that?
Is that same as Stira?
Why is that a Stira?
No, that's the
you mean Binyan Vestira, that's with regards to the river. Here this is the, yes, this is, you're creating, this is a bit different. This is, you're creating, it appears if you're creating water. It appears if you're creating water, and that's the is over here. Yeah. So that's a bit different to breaking the ice on the floor, because that's, you're breaking something here. It's just, by rubbing it, it appears if you're actually making the water to come out from it. You're changing the physical substance. So, ve'im yitoil, and if you did wash, yizor shalo yitochkem ben yodov. If you did wash your hands in this water, which has got lots of ice and snow, so you ideally shouldn't wash, but if you did wash, then don't squeeze it between your hands, that you're not crushing and making this ice into a watery substance. That's if you dalef. Mishnah Berurah Sifkot explains, Sifkot Lamed Zayin, Shalohi Tol Yodov, Kidei Shalohi Di Risuk, because you're crushing the ice by washing your hands strongly, and that's the ice over here. Mishnah Shulchan Aruch Seif Yud Beis. One should be careful. Salt. If you're rubbing your hands with salt, what is going to happen? Is it going to get watery? It will dissolve. It will get watery, right? So Shulchan Aruch says that if you should be careful not to wash your hands with some salt, because if you're doing it with salt, it will, the same is applies. That Mishnah Berurah explains, if called Amet Ches Hatam, Kanal B'Shalik V'Borot. It's the same concept and with the snow and the snow and the hail. There is going to be water coming out from this. It will appear as if you're actually making water. This is if it's only salt. But of course you are allowed to put salt in the water. Why? Why are you allowed to put salt in the water?
Aren't you?
You are allowed to. You can. You cannot take salt and rub it. But, because that's, you're going to create this watery substance. But, you can put salt in the water. Why? You can.
I thought we're not. On Pesach Friday night, we don't do that.
So there is, yes, you're right. There is, at times, it's Bishul Shaila. But let's see about Bishul. Let's see about Bishul now. Yeah. So he says that you can, because you can put it in water, because and the reason is, because we learned that the only problem is if you are making something which from a solid into a water. But you remember we spoke about the ice cubes? Why not to put, what's that? Like, if you want to be machmir, like the Ramon, what do you do with the ice cubes? Put a little bit of water there. You don't have to put ice cubes in a drink. Why? Because it's water already. Same with salt, the same. If you put salt in a water, then it's not a problem, because all it is to create something liquidy. But if you're putting in a liquid, then there's no shaila. By the way, this may be the point, maybe, to speak, although it's not directly connected, but maybe a little bit, about liquid soap. Because it's a bit comparable to this. To liquid soap, I mean. So we're learning now that liquid salt is a... Not liquid, sorry, I'm... To take salt and rub it in your hands, that is also because you're creating a kind of liquid. That's what Shulchan Aruch is teaching us over here. So I'm asking, what will be the halacha, it's a little bit comparable, if you have soap, and you're rubbing soap, liquid soap, in your hand, and that is creating, the substance is also changing, and it's becoming a thing, is that also a mutter? Now, a bar of soap, that everybody agrees, that's also could be even with the Isa, but I'm talking about liquid soap. Is that also a mutter? With water is mutter. With water is mutter. With that, water will be also. Okay, so let's... With
water.
With water? With water, let's talk with. With water, it's with water, it is mutter. Without water, it will be also, I suppose. Is that what you're saying? Liquid soap. There is a very interesting emotion. That says, there's an interesting Moshe, which is taken in Moshe Chelik Aleph, that Moshe asks it. There's an interesting Moshe, that Moshe holds that liquid soap is also. So according to Moshe, the only Eitzah is, he says, unless it's extremely liquidy, Moshe was Mekel. He says, if you've got the soaps that we've got nowadays, and you, so he held it as an Issam Mamachik, that if you have a soap, and you're making into lava, that's the word, and then it would hold us also. Lemaisa, Ramosha was matte if it was very, very liquidy, but the Talmid of Ramosha are very machmed. There's a whole, all the Talmid of Ramosha is one of the very few, I can't say few, it's one of the select chumos of Ramosha, which is probably not very well accepted, because all the poskim, including Rav Eliashiv, Rav Shlomo Zalman, they disagree with that in principle, and they hold that it's not an issa at all. Only hard, solid soaps are a problem, but liquid soaps are never also. But it's important to know that there is such a Ramosha that actually holds it, it's also, and the Talmid of Ramosha are machmir. Yeah.
What about the soap thing?
There's a phone.
So, I mean, Pashtus, I would also agree that it's probably Mimareach, unless there is, I mean, Pashtus. I don't see, unless, right, unless, okay, so that's the thing. If it is something which goes, there's a Ma'asham that holds that if something is completely absorbed and there's nothing, not the substance is primarily in the skin, absorbed within the skin, and is nothing external, there is a kula of the Ma'asham. But I don't know if that's what would apply in this particular. No. Oh, I see. So it's yes. It's like an, it's yes. I don't think it's a soap. It works very differently. It's So yeah. By the way, I did hear from somebody that said they're only doing really just shmeying the bacteria around. So, but yeah. So I would probably assume. Yeah, but I. And I do this on Shabbos. What do you think? Why is it not Mimareach? Why is it not? No, I'm saying it could be potentially Mimareach. It could be. Pardon? Neulat? Is it Neulat? There's no bubbles. You're probably talking about bishul. What are you talking about? If there is salt, there is a ramah.
Salt,
salt in. To make salt water or to put salt in the soup.
Yeah.
He says if you do a 3-2-1, that's probably can't do that. But if you two-thirds melach, it's a strong one, you can't. Last words of Sivkot Namazayin. I thought you meant about putting salt in a soup, which there is a remo, which is machmir. But a nice, Okay, let's carry on. Sifut Gimel very quickly. Doireis shele beraglo vein choshesh. A person allowed to tread, step on snow, and you don't have to worry about it. Walking on snow is mutter. That's the good news. Sifkot la metezim mishnebura, bottom line. Ve'af ima shelig nimoyach v'zov alidei zeh leslem. Although, when you are walking on the snow, inevitably you're making some water. Yeah, so we said before that making water is a problem. But walking on snow is fine. Walking on snow is fine. Less than but it's not a problem. Kivan she'ena mischaven, since this is not your intention. It's a dovah she'ena mischaven, and therefore it is mutter. V'atas kosav, the Taz does hold, kivan she'u dovah she'ev she'le zo'e b'zeh, lo'goz hu'bei. The Taz says, no, forget about dovah she'ena mischaven, because if you go with dovah she'ena mischaven, you're going to run into trouble. Because it is perhaps a psikesha. So he said, don't go with that shtickel Torah of Dovah She'ena Mischaven, because if it's Ena Mischaven, it's not your intention, you could still be a problem, because we know that the Gemara says, if something is a Psik Reisha, it's inevitable, and for sure will happen, then it's not necessarily, it doesn't, the head of Ena Mischaven does not apply. And if it's also inevitable, so it's a Psik Reisha, and a Psik Reisha the problem. You're going to tell me it's a Psik Reisha al-Nichle, but Psik Reisha al-Nichle is still also. So the task goes a different Malach. He says, yes, you are allowed to walk on snow, but for another reason. Forget about Dovah She'ena Mischaven, but the reason why it's mutter to walk on snow is because nobody can hold himself back from it. Something you can't stop yourself.
That's not a reason.
Very good. So what does the Taz mean? But the Taz says, the words are, Kevin Shodovah She'ev She'ezoi, since something that you can't stop, you can't help. So therefore, Logos Hubei Chachomi were not, never asked it. So that's I agree with you. This needs to be understood. What does that mean? You can't help it. So it's going to be mutter. I mean, with that hetzer, you could surely drive from. What does it mean? Since you can't help it.
I mean, it's clear that it would be a major problem if it was us. But
But maybe you have to, everybody stays home on Shabbos. Maybe you have to stay home on, maybe you have to stay home on Shabbos. Maybe you have to stay home on Shabbos when it's snowing. Those two Shabbos that it's snowing, you have to stay home.
Months in some countries.
Yeah, in some countries it's going to be. So what is it? So I think that it is. It's a bit more deep than that. What do you Taina? Lo gozu beichom. We're not didn't ask it because it's Nikonol. So it seems to be what it means is that since this is anywhere derabonon, we're talking about Issa derabonon. At times Chachom never is. That's probably what you're referring to. Chachom sometimes didn't make an Issa derabonon. If it's something which is not possible for Rav Am, this is such a concept. Chachamim did not establish this Issa. This is Chachamim. It's not Torah. This is Chachamim. This is the Rabbanon. Sometimes Chachamim chose not to establish a certain Issa because it's too difficult. So this is over. It's not pshat that there was an Issa got the Rabbanon, but it's too difficult, so forget it. But it is Chachamim never established an Issa in this particular this.
We're talking about Nolid the Rabbanon, not Nolid the Raisa.
Yeah. This is all Drabonon.
Why is this not
derived? I think it is because you don't really need the liquid. You do not need the liquid in the first place.
So it's
not. Yeah, I think maybe even
more. It's not Derbishan.
It's Derbishan Mischaven. Yeah, I know, but it is. I think that it's just Tzuras HaMalach. It's not the Tzuras HaMalach is not here. It's a Drabonon. It's not the Raisa. So therefore, so Rabbi said, just to finish, just to summarize what we learned tonight, we spoke about not to wash your hands with snow and ice in the water, but if you did, then just make sure not to crush it. We spoke again about this concept of making something into a liquid. We spoke about not use salt, not rub the salt, because that's making a watery substance. And finally, we spoke about you're allowed to walk on Shabbos on snow, because although inevitably you are going to create some water, but this is not Chomer never asked it. Okay.